So hello and welcome. We're joined today by Dan Williams from Visualize Training and Consultancy. He will be speaking to us about the causes of sight loss, barriers employees with visual impairments may face, the importance of eye health within organisations, and adjustments that can be made. In addition to the presentation, there's a video, and I have typed the link into the chat box so that you can access it after the webinar. As most of you will know who've joined our webinars before, I'm Helen Vales-Russell. I'm an occupational therapist, clinical services manager at Form Health, and a trustee for the VRA, and I'm supporting activities in the background for the presentation. Some housekeeping first. Those of you who are familiar with our webinar series will know that you've entered the session in listen-only mode. Otherwise, it can get very noisy. You'll have the opportunity to be heard, though, through any questions you want to pose in writing. To do that, if you could use the chat box for that, type them into the chat box, and at the end of the session, I will read them out and Dan can answer them for us. We'll have approximately 40 minutes of presentation. During the session, we'd appreciate it if you could help publicise this and future events by tweeting using hashtag VRA webinar. We aim to be finished at 1 p.m. The session is being recorded for our VRA members only resources on the VRA website, www.vrassociationuk.com. As a member, you'll be able to access this presentation within the coming weeks. Our past webinars are also available for members only. Finally, we'd be grateful for your feedback on the session today. Instead of a survey appearing at the end of the presentation in the usual way, a poll will be shown at the end of the session, and we'd be grateful if you could complete it before you exit the meeting. If you would like a CPD certificate, there's now a charge of £15 for non-members. This is to cover admin costs. Certificates are free to members. Please get in touch with Deepika via inquiries at vrassociation.org.uk to request a certificate. Okay, so I'm now going to hand over to Dan and let him introduce himself and proceed with the presentation.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me okay, Helen?
I can, yes.
Great. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. So my name is Daniel Williams. I'm the founder of Visualize Training and Consultancy. I'm a qualified rehabilitation assistant for people with visual impairment, and I'm also a qualified eye clinic liaison officer for people with visual impairment. I'm also joined by my colleague, Jill Perry, who you may hear in the background. I also have sight loss myself, and I work with organisations across the UK to make services more inclusive for blind and partially sighted people, whether that's customers or employees, by delivering visual impairment awareness training to raise awareness amongst colleagues that are working with visually impaired staff, also raising awareness of eye health amongst organisations, and I also do workplace assessments for those people that have visual impairments that are struggling in the workplace. And about 50% of people that have a visual impairment will give up their jobs because they think that they can no longer do their job due to their vision, just because they're not aware of what is available to help support them in the workplace. So hopefully by the end of today's session, we will all realize and come to the conclusion that sight loss should not equal job loss, and we can empower employees that have visual impairments with this message. If you've got any questions, like Helen said, just ask them at the end. You can also follow us on Twitter at VisualizeTC, and you can also tweet us as we're going through the session. Okay, so I'm going to talk first of all about the main causes of sight loss. So there's four main causes of sight loss, which is congenital, disease, injury, and old age. So I'm going to go through them one by one. So congenital blindness can happen during pregnancy. So the mother could drink too much alcohol, take too many drugs, could be in a violent relationship during pregnancy, and the baby or the fetus could be injured. The mother could also come into contact with dog or cat feces during pregnancy. And also the child potentially could come into contact with dog or cat feces as well. And so it's really important to try and prevent this. I'm going to go on to diseases now. So common diseases such as multiple sclerosis, diabetes, which we know is on the increase, cancer of the eye, which you can also get, meningitis, measles, mumps, and rubella, and autoimmune diseases such as lupus and that type of thing. So again, some people don't link these type of diseases with vision, and that sometimes the primary disease is focused on, and sometimes people don't link vision. So for example, diabetes, you know, a lot of people are generally aware that you potentially could lose a leg and have that amputated, but some people don't necessarily think that you can also lose vision through that. Autoimmune diseases, you know, when they attack certain parts of the body, they can also attack the optic nerve, which could also impact on vision loss. So again, it's just making sure that when you're seeing patients or employees out on the road, actually try and link. Sometimes it can be vision problems as well, and not always to focus on their primary disability. Common injuries, so high exposure to sunlight. So people, you know, not wearing sunglasses, if you imagine what the sun can do to your skin over a period of time, imagine what the sun can do to your eyes over a period of time. So making sure that your employees wear decent quality sunglasses with UV protection, but also that your children are wearing decent quality sunglasses in the sun. Car accidents, so people having car accidents can impact on people's vision. Sports injuries, so not wearing protective gear when doing certain sports. And also DIY accidents, so people not wearing specialist goggles when they're doing certain DIY, maybe getting a nail in the eye, that type of thing. People, you know, having reactions to medication also could impact on their vision. Smoking can impact on people's vision, but also the other thing is people wearing contact lenses. So a lot of people nowadays wear contact lenses, and some people wear contact lenses in saunas, swimming pools, in the shower, and you can get bacteria from that by doing that. And it's not advisable to wear those type of things, type of contact lenses in those environments. So removing your contact lenses as well puts you at less risk of getting sight loss later on in life. Okay, so old age. People are more prone to get certain conditions when they are older, such as age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts. And also more people are more likely when they're older to get strokes. And again, strokes can impact on people's vision. So we only talk about sight loss symptoms, visual impairment, blindness, whatever terminology you want to use. Only 5% of the general of the population of people that are registered blind see nothing at all. And a lot of people think that people who are blind don't see anything at all. So only 5% of people see nothing at all. So people will have common symptoms. So they may have problems with visual acuity. And what we mean by that is that people may struggle to see in the distance. So what someone, for example, someone with 20/20 vision may be able to see at 60 meters. Someone with a visual impairment may only see 2 meters, 3 meters, 4 meters. So it's severely reduced from the general population. Some people also may have problems with contrast sensitivity. So they may have problems if, for example, there's a light gray and a dark gray together, and that may blend in for some people as one block of gray. So again, it's just to realize that situation, okay? Some people may also have problems going from a dark room or a dark environment into a light environment. They may have to wait for their eyes to adjust. That may take 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And again, people that have general 20/20 vision, they can adjust to that pretty quickly. People that have a visual impairment may take them a lot longer. Some people may struggle with depth perception. So for example, when you're walking down a step, how deep is that step? Is it 1 meter, 2 meters? And people may struggle with that as well. Some people may also have problems with, they may have headaches and they may experience severe migraines and they may not think that it's linked to their vision. They may just think that they have a headache. And some people may also have problems with glare. So, you know, when the sun is really, really bright, and again, most people can adjust to that pretty quickly, but someone that has a visual impairment may take them a lot longer to adjust to that different level in light. Also, people that have a visual impairment may experience what we call Charles-Bonnet syndrome. So if you imagine that the vision isn't seeing the full picture, the brain will start to fill in the missing gap. So if you imagine you're walking along the street and you see a puddle on the floor, and to everybody else, that looks like a puddle. But to some people, they experience Charles-Bonnet, where the brain is filling in the missing gaps because it's not seeing the full picture. It may look like a hole in the floor, or it may look like there's lots of spiders on the floor. And some people may think that, you know, they have a severe mental illness, but actually, and they may see visual hallucinations. So they may see children when there's no children there. That type of thing. But it's not that they have a severe mental illness, it's that they're experiencing Charles Bonnet because their vision isn't seeing the full picture. And some people also get diagnosed with things like dementia incorrectly because they have a visual impairment and they get visual hallucinations. But actually, it's because they're not seeing the full picture and the brain starts to fill in the missing gap. So again, it's one of those things that doesn't get a lot of exposure and a lot of people are not aware of. So as a practitioner, how do you identify sight loss, which is an interesting situation? So a lot of people will complain of certain things, such as they become clumsy. So, for example, I met a lady last week. She was diagnosed with a visual impairment at the age of 50, and she'd never been for an eye test before. And she just thought that she was a clumsy person. And her husband just used to tell her all the time that women are clumsy, and that's what she believed. And for 50 years, she went through life believing that she just thought she was a clumsy woman, and assumed that was true. She'd never been for an eye test before, and when she got, and she continued to drive, and when she used to drive, she always used to drive in the day, and she used to drive when, only with her children, because that's, she felt a lot more confident driving with her children in the car to sort of help her slightly with some of the visual clues. And that was her normal, and she thought that that was the normal, you know, normal, and that was her normal vision. When she got to 50, she got diagnosed with an eye condition, and then got told that she's legally unable to drive, and but obviously had carried on driving all that time. So it just sort of proves that there are people out there that may just perceive themselves as clumsy, but people are not generally just clumsy. They're clumsy for a reason. So when people say things like "I'm clumsy," well, you need to question why. Why are you clumsy? Is it because of your vision, or is it because of other things? Yeah. So again, some people will tell me, you know, most commonly, oh, the computer screen is really difficult to see. They may be sort of going really close to the screen. And again, it's highlighting, why are they going close to the screen? Are they not seeing it properly? So some people may have problems with eye fatigue, and they may think that their eyes are getting headaches, and so they may have headaches, and also they're really worried about so navigating around. They may struggle with navigating, so they're navigating around the office. They may be tripping a lot more, they're falling over. They're having maybe extreme headaches, so they're putting the headaches down to other problems. So it may be that they're putting headaches down to another type of condition or a disability of some sort. Other people may sort of find that actually the light in the office is causing them severe discomfort, and other people may find that they're having problems with their eyes. So their eyes start itching, or they become very red, or they become very dry. They start feeling a lot more tired than usual. But again, they're not linking this to vision. And these are all symptoms that you potentially could link to vision. But obviously you could link these to other conditions as well. But it's just making sure that you highlight that actually vision can be linked to these types of difficulties. People saying that they can no longer see print on the paper, or they're struggling to see the print. And again, just putting it down to, oh, well, I'm just over 40. And so I just have to accept that. But actually not realizing that there could be a bigger problem going on. When was the last time they went for an eye test? You know, even if they've been for an eye test, was there certain things that were missed? Was there certain things that were not picked up? Yeah. So again, people walking around, they might say to you, well, I feel really confident driving in the day, but when it comes to night, I really struggle with the light from the glare of the lights and all of this type of stuff. Or you find that people, they start to change the way that they do things. So they're more confident in the day, but then they're not as confident to go out and about in the night. And again, is it because they're just not a confident person, or is it because they're not confident to go out in the night because actually they don't see very well? And is it, and also, are they, you know, are they aware of their own condition, their own visual impairment, but they don't want to tell anyone, like their line manager or their colleague or their friend, because they're scared that they're going to lose their job? Okay, so on the screen here, what we've got is a simulation of hemanopia. And hemanopia is common with people that have a brain injury or a stroke or a blow to the head. And it just gives you an idea of how different people may see with different types of conditions. And so if you imagine that someone with a hemanopia, they may need to move their head a lot more. They may need to scan from left to right a lot more. And also they may adopt certain head postures. So they may look more to the left rather or look more to the right. And to the general public or the individual, you know, you may think that that looks a bit odd or a bit unusual, but the question is, you know, why are they adopting these different head postures? That's probably the best way that they're seeing. So they're using the adopting the different head postures to see the screen better or to see something better. Macular degeneration, which we know is generally common with older people, but again, some people, younger people do get macular degeneration. It generally affects the central vision of the eye, and people may not be able to see centrally, but they still generally have their peripheral vision at the side, below and above intact. And so, for example, people may, when they're looking at you, they may struggle to see your face. And that's why it's really important to introduce yourself so that somebody knows who they're speaking to. People may also look at you side on rather than straight ahead. And again, it's not because they're being odd or weird. It's just because actually they're using their best part of their vision to be able to see you. So it's just having that in mind, you know. And also, people with macular degeneration have different types. There may be a wet type and a dry type. Okay, so glaucoma. Again, glaucoma, a lot of people won't generally have symptoms with glaucoma. It's sort of a silent disease in a way. So people, it's where the pressure in the eyes, sometimes the pressures are really high and sometimes they're really low. So if you imagine your eyeball becoming really, really hard and the pressure in the eyeball is becoming hard, it puts pressure on the optic nerve at the back of the eye. So it slowly destroys the optic nerve over a period of time. But people won't necessarily know that they have glaucoma until they go for an eye test, because generally their peripheral vision at the side and below and above will start to decrease. And again, that would just become people's normal. They wouldn't, if they've not been for an eye test, they're not going to necessarily know that their vision is starting to encroach from the sides. People can also, once people are diagnosed, they can get treatment for glaucoma to keep the pressures not too high, not too low, so that the pressures become average. And so again, it's just, and if people have glaucoma in the family, again, it's important that people go for a regular eye test. Diabetic eye disease, again, common with people who have diabetes. Basically at the back of the eye, you have the retina. The retina slowly bleeds and it will leave scarring. And on the screen here, you can see scarring that it's left. Generally, when scarring's happened, you can't get rid of scarring, but you can have laser to stop the bleeding from happening. And again, it's about if someone has diabetes, making sure they're going for regular eye tests to try and prevent diabetic retinopathy as much as possible, trying to keep as healthy as possible and a healthy diet, managing the diabetes correctly, will reduce the chances of having this type of disease. Cataracts, which I'm sure a lot of you will be aware of. Cataracts is generally when the eye is aging and getting older effectively, and it's had a lot of exposure to sunlight and all this type of thing because people didn't wear sunglasses. People would describe cataracts as looking through a foggy or misty window. And a lot of people can generally get an operation to remove a cataract. But again, in that process, whilst they're waiting to have that cataract removed, if they are able to, then they're still going to have difficulties with work and computer use and all of this type of stuff. So workplace assessment is still generally useful for these people, even though they can potentially get their cataract removed because they may be on a waiting list for 6 months to 12 months to 2 years. Retinitis pigmentosa, again, an hereditary condition, basically which will start in the peripheral vision at the side, below and above, and it will slowly come in, effectively like looking through a loo roll. And that loo roll slowly getting smaller and smaller and smaller over a period of time. And again, people may not realize that they have this condition because it becomes their normal. And over a period of time, it's getting smaller and smaller, the field of vision. But again, people may not notice. Okay, so what I'm going to show you here is a few images of the built environment that we live in today. And the built environment that we live in today in the 21st century can enable people with visual impairment, or it can disable people with visual impairment. So if we take a look at this train station here, we have a yellow line on the platform, and that could enable somebody with sight loss to actually navigate around and make sure that they don't fall off the platform. You've also got a display board at the top. And again, for somebody that has struggles with distance, they may not be able to see that board really high up on the screen. But if we put that screen at eye level and moved it at eye level on the wall, then maybe they could go up to the screen, get closer, and see the time of the train. And at that point, that person wouldn't be disabled, they would be enabled. So that just shows to you how the environment that we live in can enable or disable people. Also, the lighting in this train station is inconsistent. So the light, some are patchy, so light and then dark and then light. And again, for people with visual impairment, it's better to have consistent lighting rather than sort of dark light, dark light. At the edge of the platform, there isn't any tactile paving, so the bumpy paving that you see at the edge. And again, that's really useful for people that have visual impairment so that they know they're at the edge of something, and especially in a train station, obviously you don't want to fall off. That would be dangerous. So here you've got a high street. And again, you look at this image and you sort of think, for someone that has a visual impairment, how easy is that to navigate? So if you look at the lines on the floor, some people will think that they can follow those lines, but if they follow the line, it's actually going to take them into a wall, which isn't really useful. Also, you've got bollards on the floor, which are at knee height. And because they're at knee height, it's obviously that somebody may trip over them or fall over them. So again, the solution is to just raise up the bollards to make it slightly higher. And with the lines on the floor, the solution again would be to remove the lines so that people don't think that they can follow the lines. And that just shows you how, again, something can enable or disable somebody. These stairs are actually in eye clinic, which is quite ironic. So again, you can see the problems for yourself. Someone going down the steps may struggle walking down those steps because they're going from dark to light. Again, they may have to stop halfway up the steps, wait for their eyes to adjust. There's no white lines on the steps to actually highlight the steps for people. But the good news is if the person does fall down the stairs, there's a bed at the bottom. And also, so that's good. And they're in a hospital as well. So, and that the handrails on the side are quite useful so that, you know, they're color contrasted from the wall. And then this image here on the right one, you can see that it's got very good color contrast on the steps. You've also got the tactile bumpy paving at the bottom and the top to tell the person that you're at the bottom or the top. And then on the left, you may see that may look like a ramp to some people that have a visual impairment. And so, okay, so that may look like a ramp to some people that have a visual impairment, and they may struggle and they may think that it's a slide and get confused. So again, it's really important to try and get rid of patterns on stairs and just have, we would subscribe to the one on the right really, just to make it easier. On this one here, you can see signage. Again, the sign you may think is really good on the left, but actually now the person is thinking, well, which toilet do I go into? And for some people, you may think that's just a trivial thing, you know, going into, the wrong toilet. But for someone that's just acquired sight loss, to go into the wrong toilet, you know, they get odd looks from men or odd looks from women and thinking, why are they in the wrong toilet? And people don't necessarily think because they can't see very well. And so people could lose their confidence if they get laughed at, or, you know, people are rude to them or that type of thing. So again, the solution for this would be to put an arrow on the body or on the head so that people know which door to go in. The good thing with this sign is it's good color contrast. But again, would you say the size is maybe too big or too small? Because the lady on the left, obviously it's very difficult for some people that have no peripheral vision. They may only see a part of the body they may only see from the dress upwards. So they may still not know. So again, maybe slightly smaller sign, but the color contrast is very, very good. And so bigger is not always better when it comes to sight loss. So on the right side, again, you've got the signs are quite difficult to see. They look quite similar. And again, people may walk into the wrong toilet. You've also got patterns on the floor. And for some people, again, with lots of patterns on the floor, it may be difficult for them to navigate. Okay, so how many people in the UK have a visual impairment? So there's currently 2 million people in the UK that have a visual impairment, and that's currently going to increase to about 4 million by 2050. And that's going to be due to an aging population, diabetes, and obesity. So, you know, it's going to double. So we're going to have a lot more people with visual impairments. So we need to make sure that our services are inclusive and also that we're delivering high quality services to those people that do struggle in the workplace with their vision. And also that we're promoting eye health prevention messages within the workplace to make sure that we catch things early, because we know that prevention is better than cure. What percentage of people that are registered blind have no vision at all? And we know that's about 5% of people. So again, if people have the perception that people who are blind can't see anything at all. So when you see somebody with a guide dog or a cane, you may think that they can't see anything at all, but most people can, okay? And it's quite funny because I also have a guide dog myself. And when I'm walking around, people will come up to me and I stroke the dog really, and they'll come up really quietly and I give the dog a little sneaky stroke. And then they'll walk off really quietly as if to say, as if I couldn't see them at all. And I call them the sneaky strokers of society. Because people think that you can't see anything at all, but I could see them. And then when I tell them that I saw you there, you sneaky stroker, they get a bit freaked out. So what percentage of the UK population don't even bother going for an eye test? It's 28% of the UK population don't even bother. So that means that those people that don't even bother going for an eye test potentially could have something wrong with their vision, but no one's ever picked it up because they've assumed that they're clumsy or they've assumed that they just get headaches. And also the scary thing is that those people are also potentially having driving on the roads today. And the other question to pose really is, how many people do you think have crashes, car crashes, due to their vision? And how many people, and do they actually get tested? You know, so when people are having car crashes, is vision ever a question of why they had the car crash in the first place? And I think it's not really considered. People don't really think too much about vision. And it's something that we definitely should be talking about. And it should definitely be on the agenda, especially as it's the year of 2020, which is 2020 vision. And it's important that we have this message. So only about 5% of people currently in the UK use Braille. And the reason for that really is technology. So for example, if I just give you an example, when I use a mobile phone and I want to read an email, this is how I would read an email. Children of the 90s, address. We contacted you a few weeks ago. Okay, so that's how I would read an email, and that's just on my iPhone. I've got it's got software built into it. And so again, technology is leading the way so that people can actually access speech on their computer or magnification on their computer, and that type of thing. But again, it's important that people have that assessment to know what's available to them to empower them to do their job effectively. And I suppose it's like back in the day when people used to use typewriters and now everybody uses computers. It's the same type of principle. But people, there is still a place for Braille for people, and still people will still use it. Okay, so there's 72% of the working age population of people with a visual impairment are unemployed in the UK. And in my mind, that's a sad state of affairs, because simple things that people can do to make the slight adjustments actually make a huge difference to people with visual impairment. And why wouldn't you want someone in your workforce that can read an email quicker than someone that can see, as I just demonstrated to you there? So 50% of sight loss is avoidable. And the main reason it's avoidable is because of things such as, you know, not wearing contact lenses in swimming pools, wearing sunglasses, all of the stuff that we spoke about earlier, but also going for a regular eye test. So every 2 years, you should go for a regular eye test. And if you do VDU use for more than 4 hours a day, then your employer is entitled to give you free eye tests as well. And a lot of people, again, are not aware of that because the employers don't all promote that. So it's important that you push that message out there. And also, if you have someone that has a condition in the family, such as glaucoma or macular degeneration, then also you should be going more regularly, so yearly. Or if you have diabetes yourself, then again, go yearly so that you catch things early. So 250 people in the UK will start to lose their sight every day. So they'll be the people that are experiencing these problems, which I said earlier. So headaches, clumsiness, tripping over a lot. And that will be early signs of their sight loss. And again, it's, are they picking up on that? So it's quite a lot of people that are starting to lose their sight every day, you know? But sometimes it doesn't get spotted until the vision has become very, very bad and people start to think, I need to go for an eye test. So 43% of people that have a visual impairment will also experience depression. So again, you know, mental health and visual impairment are very interlinked. And again, that's why it's really important that when people experience sight loss, that they get the social emotional support as well. So it's all well and good putting in lots of equipment in the workplace, which is great, but they still need the social emotional well-being support as well. So I would generally look at referring people on to counselling or to local sight loss charities to meet other people with sight loss for peer support, so they don't feel like they're the only one, you know, because I think that's also very, very important. To also refer them for rehabilitation so they know how to use a cane and how to be more independent in the home. Really, really key things that need to be addressed as someone's sight loss journey. It's not all just about equipment. Solutions. It's about bigger picture stuff for people with sight loss to actually, if they're not happy in their job and they're not happy at home, then they're not going to be happy, you know, altogether. So what jobs do blind people do, you may think? So historically, blind people used to do basket weaving, and I think we've come on a long way from that now. But in the UK, currently, we have barristers, lawyers, admin staff, managers, singers, bankers, all types of jobs, really. So the only jobs that a blind person really couldn't do is become a pilot or a police officer, or generally jobs which will include lots of driving and that type of thing. But, you know, most jobs people can do. Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to read, my colleague Jill's just going to read out a case study, and we're just going to unpick this case study.
Okay, John has retinitis pigmentosa. He has severe neck, shoulder and back pain. His employer organised an ergonomic workplace assessment. What adjustments do you think were recommended?
Okay, so I just want you to think about that. So John has severe back pain and neck pain, okay? Why do you think that is? So what generally happens is people with this, so he's got retinitis pigmentosa, which means that his vision at the side is reduced. He can't see at the side or below or above. And he's got the neck pain basically because he's moving his head from side to side, left to right, all the time scanning the screen. And he's not really seeing the screen properly. Okay. So what was recommended was
an ergonomic workplace assessment was arranged. The ergonomic assessment cost £800. There was a 34-inch large screen, which cost £500, £500, foot dress £50, and a sitting stand length £1,000, totaling £2,850.
Okay, so he had a workplace assessment, which was an ergonomic specialist, and he actually got a larger screen, which in this situation wouldn't have actually been useful because that's going to exacerbate the neck movement. Now he's going to move his neck a lot wider, left to right, left to right. His back problems probably got worse by doing that because he's moving his head and moving his neck a lot more. Actually, the problem was that he couldn't see very well, but the person that did the assessment was more focused on the physical problem rather than the vision. And if we had sorted out the vision, then actually the physical problem would have improved. So what he should have had is magnification software, an ergonomic arm to bring the screen closer to the face, a slightly smaller screen potentially, larger print keyboard, contrasting on the screen to make the screen easier to see. Also dimming the lighting in the office to make it easier for him to be able to see. And some of that stuff there was effectively a waste of money because actually if we'd sorted out the vision side of things, then actually these other things wouldn't have necessarily been necessary. And that just sort of demonstrates, and that's a common situation that I see when I go into workplaces, that people think that because someone can't see very well, that they'll just buy a massive screen and everything will be fine. But actually, sometimes that can be a lot worse and not solve the problem. And also then not all of the emotional and the social situation has been sorted out. It's not just about the equipment. It's about, has that person been referred to counseling? Have they been referred to a local charity for help and support for their home life? Because actually, you know, it's like I said, it's bigger picture for them. Okay, so what adjustments here we've got are Zoom text, which can magnify the screen, which we spoke about. So a larger keyboard or a larger screen, a CCTV on so that they can magnify, so they can put paper under the screen and it will use the camera. And the, so all of the documents, paper documents, they can blow up and make bigger, up to 50 times bigger. They people can also get iPads and iPhones, which will also magnify the screen, this type of thing. And they can also get specialist devices, which can enlarge and make things bigger for them and change the color and the contrast. And maybe an ergonomic arm so that they can bring the screen closer to their face. So that if you bring the screen closer to the face, you get bigger magnification because you're bringing the object closer to the vision. Okay, so there's lots of things that can employers can do, which for people that have visual impairment, which don't even cost anything at all, do they? So keeping an object in a regular place, you know, making sure that things are not in people's way so that they can't trip over or fall over things. Providing information in alternative formats. So rather than sending out letters all the time in small print, you know, think about larger print or emails or text, you know, just thinking about or audio formats. So just thinking about your formats. And that's not just for your employees, but your colleagues or your customers as well. Thinking about color contrast. So like I said, if you put a light gray and a dark gray together, that may just blend in as one block of gray. So changing, having a very different color contrast. So black on white or white on black, that type of thing. Fixed location desk so that the person with a visual impairment knows that they're always in that spot all the time rather than trying to locate a different desk all the time can be quite challenging and also quite stressful to find that desk all the time. And also they know they've got all their equipment set up on that desk. They know where it is. They know how to get from there to the toilet and from the toilet to the cafe and that type of thing. So it helps with navigation orientation around the office as well. Giving somebody additional breaks because they may need to administer their medication, their eye drops in a sterile environment. And they may need to rest their eyes as well because of the glare from the office. People may need flexible working hours. So they may have night blindness, meaning they struggle more in the night than they do in the day. So it's better if they come in early and then leave early before it gets dark, you know, so it's about appreciating that. And some people may need to work from home because they can manage the lighting conditions for their condition. Okay, we'll just talk a bit about guide dogs. So what do we know about guide dogs? They come in many different shapes and sizes. And generally they're Labradors, Golden Retrievers, or German Shepherds. It costs about £50,000 a year, £50,000 for the lifetime of a guide dog. So that's from birth to death. And guide dogs, literally will guide somebody around obstacles so that people don't walk into the obstacle. When you're walking, the guide dog will go to the curb and you say, find the curb, and the guide dog will find the curb. And then you have to decide whether it's safe to cross the road or not. A lot of people think that that the owner will know when to cross the road, but actually, a lot of people think the dog knows when to cross the road, but the owner needs to know when to cross the road. So they do that by using the remaining vision they have or asking a member of the public or listening to the beep on the pedestrian crossing. Guide dogs will also find steps. So if you say, find a step, the dog will find a step and put the first paw on the step. And then the owner will then say forward. Okay. So they are very, very intelligent dogs and they will just guide people around obstacles, go to the curb, sit at the curb, and then the owner will decide when it's safe to cross the road. And the guide dog will also wear the harness, which tells the public that it's a guide dog. When the dog wears a harness, it knows it's working. Like when you go to work and wear a uniform, the dog knows it's wearing a uniform when it goes to work and it will act in work mode. And when the harness comes off, the dog acts in play mode. And so it's really important to ask the owner if it's okay to stroke the dog when it's in work. So never assume that it's okay. Always ask if it's okay. And there's a time and a place, like everything. Obviously, there's when you're trying to cross the road, you don't really want someone stroking your dog. So just ask the owner. And never afraid to ask somebody if they need some help. If you don't ask, then you don't know. So it's really important just to ask somebody, would you like some assistance? And they can say yes or no. Or they can say something else. And that's just a rude person, not because they're blind. We get rude people in all walks of life. So canes, you may see a lot of people that use a long white cane, and that people will use it, move it from left to right. And basically when they're navigating along, they're going to hit obstacles if they're in their way or tell people that they have a visual impairment and they can't see very well. So please, could you just mind out the way? And also people will have a red and white striped cane. And basically that means that somebody has a hearing impairment and a visual impairment. And some people may also use a red, yellow, green, or blue cane. And that just means they can't see very well, but they also wanted a color cane because they're quite fashionable. And they wanted maybe the pink one to match the shoes or the blue one to match the coat or that type of thing. So the colored canes is a craze that come over from Canada because it was more, children were more interested by using colored canes than they would be using a white cane because they stigmatize white with older people. So it was just, but it just means that someone can't see very well if you see that, okay? And when you see the red and white ones that have got the stripes on, that just means that someone can't hear very well or see very well, and it's just to be mindful, but not necessarily completely deaf or completely blind. And again, within our assessments, we make sure that we refer people out to the correct organizations that can provide this type of training for them. Okay, so just to wrap up, like I said, my contact details are here. If you need to contact me for anything, I'm more than happy. I provide visual impairment awareness training for organizations and also workplace assessments for any employees that you have with visual impairments or anyone that's struggling with their workplace. I'll come out, do an assessment. We'll take about 2 to 3 hours. We'll look at their workstation, their setup in the workstation currently, what adjustment needs to be put in place. We'll then write a report for the employer and make recommendations for solutions, not just in the workplace, but also at home as well. So thank you very much for listening. I hope that was useful. If you've got any questions, then feel free to put them in the chat section now. And Helen's going to go through the questions. I hope she's still here, not fallen asleep.
Hi, Dan. No, I haven't fallen asleep. I'm here. I have unfortunately lost my host status because the system kicked me out halfway through. I seem to lose internet connection. Okay. So I can't share my slides, but that's not a problem. So I still have access to all the chat boxes. So we've got a couple of questions already. The first one, can you provide any information about the specialist software available?
So there's different software available for different types of people with different types of visual impairment. I think that's why it's really important so that they have an assessment to ascertain what software is appropriate for the organization, because also there's different software that will work better for different types of people with different types of eye conditions, different types of corporate sort of processes and the systems. But in terms of the general software that is recommended, it's JAWS, which is speech software, NVDA, which is speech software, ZoomText, which is magnification software, Supernova, which is magnification software. And there's others available as well. So there's lots of different ones, but again, it's about having that assessment to make sure that we get the right one for the right individual.
Yeah, there's so, I suppose, as we know from what you've just been talking about, there's so many different possible things that people might need that it would be very bespoke. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question. It's very similar. What about voice activated software? Does that work?
Yeah, and again, for some people, so like things like Dragon and that type of thing, again, it would depend on that. I would go back to it. It's bespoke to the individual. Sometimes it will work, other times it won't. But sometimes managing speech software, magnification software, and voice dictation software can be a lot of softwares for an individual to manage. So it would depend on their capability to do that, because if they need magnification and they also need to dictate, then some people may be more tech savvy than others. Others, you know, so it's going to really depend on the individual.
Yeah.
And also some of the softwares will conflict equally as well. So yeah.
Right. So it's about making sure that you've got someone with the right experience to guide you through that.
Yeah.
The next question, would sight impairment have to be reported to the DVLA?
So sight impairment, yeah. So people with the DVLA, so generally the ophthalmologists and the optometrists will report to DVLA. It's generally done on a self-declaration. So the individual is generally the person that should be reporting their sight loss. But if you really do feel that if somebody is at risk, then what I would do is speak to that individual first, and try and inform them to do it themselves. But if you really do feel they're at risk, then, you know, if as a healthcare professional, yes, you are sort of, it would be your job to report it if you feel they're at risk, but make sure that they're aware of what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, they're coming in as we're speaking. So, do you provide your services through or work together with Access to Work?
Years ago I used to be an Access to Work assessor. I no longer do Access to Work assessments. I do private insurance companies now, or private companies that will just commission me for the assessment. They'll pay for the assessment, the equipment, and they'll just get things moving. The difference between me and Access to Work is Access to Work will generally only spend about 45 minutes with the individual. Generally, the assessors are all generic and they're not specialists in one specific area. And they're only looking at equipment, whereas I'm looking at the full holistic picture, home life, work life, and also referring them on to other services that can help them as well.
Okay. And what resources would you recommend we direct colleagues of those with a visual impairment who want to learn more? So where would you recommend we direct colleagues?
Well, it depends, I suppose, in what type of resources that they would want. So if they need a workplace assessment and they need adjustments, then I can help with that. If they want, and then I would ask, can I just ask what sort of things you would want, I suppose?
Okay. So to the person who asked that question, if you want to clarify that, we'll come back to that question. I'll move on to another question to give them a chance to do that. Which geographical areas do you cover?
UK wide, yeah.
Okay. And that's the... Okay, so we've got a bit more clarification on that. So online resources, so people can learn about how to support their colleagues and be sensitive to their issues.
So I have a resource for that. So I can, on our website, so if you go on visualizetrainingandconsultancy.co.uk and then go on resources, it's on there. But I'll also be sending some stuff through to the VRA as well to put on their website.
Okay, then that's great. What we'll do, there's a couple of, we'll also put the link to your video on there as well.
Yeah.
So another question, do you provide services in Northern Ireland?
Yeah.
That was a nice easy answer. And it'd be good to know about resources for newly visually impaired people. So
okay,
are there some you can direct us to?
Yeah, so people that are newly visually impaired, some people that are newly become visually impaired, they'll be entitled to benefits, and so I would probably say the best people for that would be the RNIB, and to have a look at their website for that, for newly diagnosed as visually impaired.
Okay, no, that's great, thank you. And what looks like our last question, we may have another one come in while I'm speaking. What training would you suggest employers focus on while supporting someone?
Yeah, so we deliver visual impairment awareness training, and that's all around giving the staff members confident, getting the staff members confident to actually support that individual with visual impairment. So we do sighted guidance. So how do you guide someone around the office with a visual impairment? How do you make your colleagues that are working with that individual confident? Because a lot of people feel you know, they, if they say the wrong thing, they're going to offend the staff member, or they don't know how to guide somebody, so they start dragging somebody along, or they don't know about the guide dog etiquette or appropriate language. So we do visual impairment awareness training to actually make sure the staff are confident around that person with a visual impairment, and just to sort of normalize it. And I think that's really, really important, especially when you've got a new member of staff as part of the integration process, because they may not know, or they may not know about, they may know, not, they'll know about their own visual impairment, but they may not know, you know, certain things. And so it's useful for them as well, but also useful to the staff so that they don't feel sort of that awkwardness.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so other questions have come in while we've been talking. Do you provide services in the Republic of Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay. And another question asking about charges for an assessment, asking how much you charge for an assessment, or is that something that...
That's something you can email me for separately, yeah.
Okay. And what we'll do, we'll make sure your details are available for people to do that. Got another comment here. Thanks for what you said about Access to Work. Would it ever be possible to request a specific assessor such as yourself through Access to Work, or to get a report done privately and then request Access to Work request the funding? And then request that they do the funding of the recommendation.
Yeah, so you can do that. So I can do the, so you can pay for the assessment, and then Access to Work will basically use that assessment to pay for some of the equipment. Yeah,
brilliant. That's handy to know.
But in terms of the Access to Work process at the moment, they're not using specialist assessors for specialist conditions. They're just using generic assessors. I think there is a campaign at the moment to try and get specialist assessors for that, but it's not something that's being done at the moment.
Okay. So, and then really just a comment now, saying brilliant presentation and really useful information. Thank you, Dan. And also, someone's popped up for me, thank you very much, your website, and also a link for the VRA awards, and another comment saying excellent, thank you. So if that's all the questions, I'm just having a look, I can't see anything else coming up. Thank you, Dan, that was really really interesting presentation. If there are no further questions, as I don't think there are, that will conclude today's presentation. But I'd like to thank Dan for joining us today. Also, before you leave the webinar, we'd be really grateful if you could complete the poll that will be on screen in a second, to provide the feedback. Unfortunately, I can't actually, because I've lost my my status as the lead on the on this webinar. I need someone to do it for me. I don't know if Matt or Kirsty, you're able to do that, to just hit the button on the poll and launch the poll. I'm just, bear with us, sorry about this. Okay, so Dan, I don't know if you or Jill are
able
to
try and,
thank
yeah,
you,
try
you're
now,
a star.
Yeah.
So it's on the bottom panel usually, and it as if you go to the bottom panel, it pops up and you can do poll, and then it says launch poll. Yes, brilliant, you're a star. Thank you.
Pleasure.
So if people could provide your feedback through the poll, we'd be really grateful. Our next webinar is scheduled for February the 20th. Joe Yarker will be presenting, and further information on the opportunity to register will be available on the VRA website. We'll also send out some additional information shortly. So thank you very much for joining us today. I will keep the session open for a while, so that for sort of 15 minutes or so, to give people time to answer the questions on the poll. But thank you very much for joining. Thank you for your patience with any, shall we say, teething problems we've had with the new system, but hopefully it's not spoilt your enjoyment. And we will have everything, we'll be far more used to it by the next time we do this session. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you, Dan, for a really useful session.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.